Hey everybody, this is Pam coming to you from the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering, and it's also freely downloadable in iTunes as a podcast. Today I'm excited to have one of my favorite guests and good friend, Nina G, back on the show to talk with us a little bit about our recent experience at the NSA conference in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Nina, how's it going?
Good. Hey, how are you?
Good, good. Really excited to be able to catch up with you since we both returned from the conference. Are you still on a little bit of a high?
I don't think it's a high. I think it's the bounce back after the high. There's always such a weird adjustment coming back from the NSA conference, and that's kind of, you know, what I'm experiencing now and kind of looking at everything and processing, because it's such a special time and it's so great, and then you return to the reality of everyday life and all of that stuff. So, you know, I'm just I've been thinking a lot about all that.
Well, I'll definitely be interested to find out more about what you mean, but I mm-hmm. really want to get to chatting, because many of the listeners know, since you've been on two times before, know that your first talk, you were talking about being an aspiring comic. And in your second chat, you had been performing for a year. And today we're going to talk about the experience that you just had performing in front of your peers who stutter at a venue at the NSA conference. What was that like?
It was really incredible, and it was like nothing else I'd ever experienced. One of my friends there, Sasha, had said, I came here, I really wanted to see you do the stand-up, so we have to figure out a way. I'm like, well, I've tried all these other clubs, and they keep saying no. And he's all, no, we're going to make this happen. So we went to, like, every single bar on the block, and we went into this one place, Frick O'Shea's, and when I walked in, I thought, okay, this might be a possibility. And we talked to the guy there, and I said, okay, I'm pretty sure I could pack this place out, which I really felt I was exaggerating. and I said, I'm pretty sure we could get anywhere from 20 people to 100. And he's like, okay, I'll try it out. And we more than packed it out. I think there was like 100, 130 or something there. And almost all of them had stuttered. So it was interesting performing in front of an all stuttering audience, because the things that fluent people laugh at were not the same things we had laughed at, and vice versa. So that was interesting in and of itself, but then just the honor of performing in front of my people. And you know, as I came back, I thought, wow, that is such an incredible experience, but also in a way kind of bittersweet, because black comedians get to perform in front of black audiences all the time, and gay and lesbian comics get to perform in front of gay and lesbian audiences all the time. This was my one opportunity, so I hope that I could get it again. But when I came back, I got up at the Punchline in San Francisco, which is what every comic in the Bay Area who's at my level waits for, and like I only do it every 6 months. And I went up, and I totally shouldn't have, because I bombed. And I never bombed, but I bombed. And I think part of it was that I was on the assumption that because you know that it's that weird thing when you watch TV when you're at the conference and you're like, why isn't David Letterman stuttering? This is weird. Because you assume everyone does. And that night, instead, because I had only been back for 2 hours, and like it was very interesting. So I'm just trying to get some of my mojo back, because it's every audience that I see is like, you guys are my family, which, you know, I have that opportunity once a year. So
mm-hmm. Now, had you planned this? Like, before you even arrived in Texas, had you planned or hoped to do this?
Hope. But, like, me, and this is why Steve Kaufman introduced me, was because he had worked with me to try to get a gig there, and just people turned us down, and we're like, well, there's going to be 800 people there, so you might want to reconsider this. So I was really happy that we got to have a show that was just kind of us and Jody Fuller, who I had been on for like months and months and months, saying, hey, would you like to do a show? Would you like to do a show? He's all, no, I don't think so, no. I'm all, well, could you introduce me? And it went from him just introducing me to him doing a set. And he hadn't gone up in months and months, almost a year. I'm not exactly sure, because he was deployed, and he just hadn't done comedy in a while. So I was so happy that he agreed to do the show as well.
Yeah, I mean, for me, sitting in the audience watching this whole thing unfold, it was very surreal for me, because I had always been, you know, been kidding around with you or playing around with you when I see you posting things on Facebook. Hey, I'm playing at such and such. Who wants to come? Message me. And I'm like,
yeah,
you know, that's 3,000 miles away. So to be sitting there and actually, you know, getting ready to hear you perform and have the extra special treat of having another person who stutters, who's a comic, also do it. It was very surreal for me. So it's got to have been 10 times as surreal for you.
Yeah, well, one of the young guys, Ben Goldstein, I had lunch with a bunch of people on the last day, and Ben was there. And he said, I never thought I'd see a stuttering stand-up comic talk about stuttering in front of a stuttering audience. I was like, yeah, that's right. Yes, that explains it all. it was perfect. It was just, you know, because, you know, I think part of being at the conference is a sense of validation and the sense of that you're not alone. And I think I get into this bubble performing in front of non-stuttering audiences. I didn't know that it could feel like this. And that's where I think I'm having a hard time now, because I see the audience, I'm like, you guys don't stutter, why should I tell you any of this? So I kind of have to get myself out of that so that I can go back and start to kill rooms again like I have in the past.
So wait a minute now. I think I'm a little confused. You're not considering what you did as killing the room?
No. I did well at the show. At this stuttering conference, but I've gotten up a few times after that in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and like I just haven't done that well.
Oh.
And I think a lot of it is like it's like I left my heart with the audience, and so I just have to kind of adjust back. And I think this is one of those things, is sometimes as a stutterer, you leave your heart at the conference, and you have to take it, you have to come back and you have to see what you're going to do with that experience now. And that's kind of the metaphor that I think you saw in the video that
yeah.
I sent you.
Yeah, and I think what I would like to do, with your permission, for the listeners that don't have access to Facebook
mm-hmm.
and are in other countries, is it okay if I link that video to
Definitely.
This episode? Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, and it's on YouTube, so.
All right, good. But I just don't want to, you know, be referencing something here and have, you know, people listening and not really be sure, you know, what we're referring to or what we're
exactly.
talking about.
Yes.
So another thing that kind of popped into my head, did you find yourself preparing differently for the audience of stutterers than you
mm-hmm.
typically do? Like how?
Okay, so there are some things, like I do this one thing in the beginning where I stutter on my name as a setup of the joke,
mm-hmm.
and I use that in different ways. And part of the reason why I put it so early on is sometimes people actually laugh when I stutter, which just really upsets me and gets my goat. And so what I do is I put it early on, so I let people laugh at that, and then we get it out of the way. And nobody laughed about at the stuttering conference. They were like, yeah, and so. and I kind of already had that sense, so I didn't emphasize that as much as I usually do. So there are those kinds of things that I knew would be understood in a different way. And that's why I really like to perform to diverse audiences. So, you know, I'll go to an all gay or lesbian room and do comedy because I think that it builds perspective. And I really enjoy that, and I really appreciate that. So this was a perspective that I haven't been able to enjoy, which is great.
The other thing that I noticed as far as preparation, and I could be totally wrong because
mm-hmm.
I haven't seen you prepare in San Francisco, but as when a bunch of us were walking down Houston Street, heading towards the club, some of us stopped at that wonderful gelato place and got some
gelato.
Yeah, that
was good, huh?
It was yummy. I'd never had that before anywhere.
Yeah.
So, and you had either been there right before us or you were
mm-hmm.
standing outside having yours, and you started heading. You know, heading along, and I
mm-hmm.
said something to you, or I motioned to you, you know, like, Nina, wait up, you know, wait for us, and we'll walk together as a group. And you're like, no, I got to prepare. And you want, and
mm-hmm.
it seemed like you wanted to just walk alone. And then you like point it to your head, like you were trying to
mm-hmm.
gesture to me, like nerves or something like that. What was
oh,
that?
Oh yeah, it was everything. It was like, you know, at the stuttering conference, I'm usually up until 5 in the morning, and the night before the performance, I was so nervous that I got to bed at like 1 o'clock, so which is early there. And you know, it was that. I mean, I think part of it was. There's a lot of vulnerability in doing stand-up because you are presenting, like, not only your material but also your point of view. And I think when you represent yourself from a certain community, I think it's important to – I mean, I always hope that I represent stuttering in a way that has some dignity. And so I was really hoping that people would feel that. And then there's also, you know, swearing and saying dirty words in front of everyone too. So, you know, I was a little bit afraid of that. But in the end, I'm just so happy that I was able to share that aspect of myself and my life. And I just got such great feedback afterwards. So
that was going to be my next question. What kind of feedback did you get? Because it was a very diverse audience of age, of first timers, of SLPs. So, I mean, what type of, you know, feedback did you get? Did you get a lot of hugs? Did you get, you know, verbal feedback?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it was just a little bit of everything, and just people, I think, people just kind of liking the experience of seeing someone who stutters in front of other people and talking kind of in a free way. And my favorite part was that then people kind of embraced some of the things that I talked about, and I saw them online, or I saw them calling each other those things. And to me, that's like the biggest compliment, is to give some kind of voice and context to our experience that we don't usually get.
Yeah. Now, what about like some of the SLPs, speech language pathologists that were in the audience that don't stutter? Did you get any feedback or reaction from them?
It was just Charlie, I think Charlie Shaw, who's from Tennessee, I think. I can't think of. Anyway, he's just super nice anyway, and he said he enjoyed it. It's the non-stuttering SLPs. They were, you know, nice and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but they didn't give me anything really specific.
Did you get any sense that anybody was offended?
I don't think so. Not that anyone told me. Mm-hmm. So, and some people said, yeah, it was dirty, but it was appropriately so. And then the next day, so Cyber gave me the whole rationale that you said, you know, if you stutter, then you've earned the right to say the F words. So
now how did, I mean, now he wasn't there at your comedy performance. So how did that conversation with him even come up?
Oh no, I didn't even talk to him about that. That was in his keynote.
Right.
That's what you missed, Pam.
Well, I know. But
you'll see that, friend.
I know. I feel terrible admitting that publicly, that, yeah, I was at this conference with 800 other people who heard David Seidler, and I didn't. But very sheepishly, I admit to that. But no, there was a picture of you that you posted on Facebook that you were him sign something or whatever.
Yeah.
And I kind of got the impression that maybe you and he had shared a joke about...
No, there was no time for any of that.
Okay. That's what I was just curious about. Did she and he have a chance to, like, have some little inside connection about that?
No, I don't expect to have a connection with someone who I spend a minute with. So I didn't have the opportunity like the party pants kid did, who did that great poem at the end.
Oh,
so
God,
it seemed like they really made a connection.
Yeah. And I was I was very happy that I had my trusty little flip recorder with me, because I did record Philip Garber. He is just like such a hero of mine. I did record that poem, and of course I asked his permission, and I've since posted that on my blog. I've recorded Vicky Shutter and Russ Hicks, their talk, and Vicky introducing Russ for an award, and Russ believing that he was going to be doing that for Vicky. So I was able to record that, you know, and of course, then also ask for their permission. And I was also recording you in the club where you did the comedy performance. And if you noticed, I have not posted that because, first of all, I don't have, you know, I didn't ask you yet. And, you know, I mean, you're the one that has to decide, you know, if you want that. But I was very happy that I did record it because you called my name out twice and I was so excited. I was so excited. You don't know how special that made me feel. Because again, I told you, I already had that like surreal feeling, like, wow, I'm getting to hear her like I've been wishing that I could for the whole year. And then you mentioned me twice and that was like, oh my God, I'm recording this too. This is so special.
Yeah, no, and that is the thing, is when I talk about someone in my stand-up, it's to pay them some kind of honor because they've been, you know, someone in my life. And you were the first one that I was on a podcast with, and, like, I just love your show and the perspective that a woman brings to this, you know, it's a minority within a minority perspective. So anybody who I make fun of, including my little joke that I did about Steve, you know, it's all out of love, and it really is love. So I was glad I was able to preference you in that.
Oh well, I really appreciate that because you know, I have a lot of love for you as well because you're really paving the way and doing things that a lot of people like yourself when you were younger, you know, wished that they could do or hoped that they could do and never thought that they could do. And now you're doing it.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah. But, you know, you're really inspirational for a lot of people. And, how does that feel for you to even hear that when people, because I know only person that said that.
Yeah, no, and I get that. And I mean, that's one of my first things that I say in my act is, if you stutter, I'm an inspiration. If you don't, I'm just angry. I know that people are going to see me in that way. And that's why I hope I represent their experience in a dignified way as well. And yeah, it's hard, but I've kind of learned to let go some of that. And as long as I can stay humble about it, I think that that's one of the important things. I think it's when people become like the inspiration, and then they think that they're better than everybody else, because I've seen that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully I can handle it in a way that is inclusive and dignified. So,
well, I definitely think that you're, you know, doing that, because just the way that you responded to that, because I have also had people comment to me, oh, you're so inspirational, you do so much, your podcast, you know, and I always feel really funny.
I know.
Receiving that, and I have a hard time letting that in, and I just think that has to do with, you know, my own many years of low self-esteem and not feeling good about myself and not feeling that I deserved accolades and whatnot. So, you know, kudos to you for, you know, allowing that in and feeling good and letting yourself inspire other people, because that's kind of why you put yourself out there in the first place, right? Sort of. Nina, you there? Did Did I lose you?
Well,
that is the sound of me calling Nina back.
Yes.
We just experienced the first dropped call on.
And you know, I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
Yeah, that was weird.
Okay.
So, that's okay. You know what? Just go with the flow. This is real life.
Exactly.
So we'll have the little, you know, the ringing of the phone in there. So, I don't know if you answered my question, but I think what I was saying was that it's pretty cool that you handle the, you know, people thinking of you as an inspiration, because the whole purpose of you putting yourself out there is to inspire other people, right?
Yeah, and a lot of times it's about them and it isn't about you. So, you know, if someone says that you're an inspiration, yes, but also you're inspiring something in them, and it's more about them than it is you. So, like, for me, I can handle that kind of feedback because I kind of, you know, say in my head, like, yes, but for you, this, you know, it changes the point of view a little bit.
Now, what do you mean exactly it's more about them? I'm not sure.
Because, you know, it's like you could watch the same thing as me, and it may touch you, but it may not touch me. I think people oftentimes need to find that inspiration, and it's going to be different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think to allow people to have those kinds of feelings on you, I think is really important for them. And that's where, like, there's an impulse in me that says, oh, no, I'm not. But if I did that, then it kind of invalidates their feelings too, that they have to have, and why not have it on you instead of someone else, you know?
Oh, that, you know, that really makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought of it like that. That really does make sense. Now, at the beginning of our conversation, we talked a little bit about adjusting back to life mm-hmm. after the conference and being back home and dealing with all the emotions and everything that goes along with that. Have you had an opportunity to talk to any of your family or significant others about the experience of performing comedy in front of your peers?
Yeah, and, you know, and it just, for me, this one, like, the comedy was kind of more of the avenue to become closer to the people there, and closer to people like you and Danielle and Sasha and David Resnick and people who I've known in the past, Jamie and Marianne, to like tighten our bond, but then also forming these new relationships too. And it just gave me the opportunity, performing gave me the opportunity to make more connections. Mm-hmm. And I think the connections are really what impacted me. And like I said in my in the previously secret information thing that you're going to post is what really impacted me. And I really didn't understand this until I was at the park. Well, okay, until I came back with like this intense feeling of like love for the people that I met there, and that I continued to have a relationship with, and it was just like this—it's this big intensity. And it wasn't until I was hiking with my boyfriend up in the hills, and I saw a sister and a brother talking to each other, and the brother like was just being affectionate with the sister, like holding her hand or something in this very playful way. I was like, oh, that's what I experienced at the Stuttering Code Conference, because even though I have a brother, I never really experienced that. It's that kind of affection because of the dysfunction in my extended family, not my my parents were great, but there was lots of dysfunction in my extended family, which then caused me not to have relationships with a lot of people in my family. So it's at the Stuttering Conference, I started to be able to engage in that way that I hadn't been in my own family. And so for me, having that experience just really impacted me. Mm. And that is something that I'm bringing back and that I hope I can cultivate more in the next months and years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, I think I commented to you at some point, either through a text or an email or something, that I think that you and I are very alike.
Yeah,
because,
I know.
Yeah, I kind of have that similar experience. Very dysfunctional, immediate family. Nobody in my family ever really learned how to express emotion. So we just don't know how to do it with each other, either at good times or bad times. It's, you know, so it's just always funny to me. Well, not funny, but, you know, when you go to one of these conferences, how you can be so intimate with people that you don't really know that well, telling people like everything and hugging people, and I'm like, gosh, I don't do that with my family. I can do that so easily with my NSA family, and that's very interesting that we kind of both experience that to some degree. But on the same hand, and I think you were alluding to it at the beginning of the our conversation, is that it also brings a certain sadness, like when we come back from the conference.
Bittersweet.
Yeah. Because I kind of felt like that all, you know, since I've returned as well, like something's missing, like, you know, it's like it didn't really even happen because I'm right back into my routine.
Yeah.
And, it's bittersweet. It's sad. Like, I just miss the camaraderie and the support and turning around at every corner and running into somebody that gets you just because we stutter.
Yeah, and people, I don't think, understand that whatsoever. And, you know, it's a metaphor that I talked about in the video that I just want to talk a little bit about now, is that when you go to the conference, I feel that you bring these seeds back, and some of the seeds are going to grow and germinate and bloom, or they'll grow like weeds, which is even better because they'll be hard to get rid of. But you need the first one I went to in 15 years was the Arizona one. And I came back and I was like, I have these seeds, but I don't have anywhere to plant them. So I need to redo all of my soil so that these could start to grow. And that's when I changed a ton of stuff in my life. And then I felt like, okay, now these seeds can start to take life. But I think there are certain things that you can take back, and that if you are really diligent and mindful, you can have, like, I just wrote this up, hopefully for the NSA newsletter, but that there could be like an NSA garden where I take back seeds that are a result of the connections that I've made and friendships and relationships that then I could grow in my own life, so that I have some piece of the utopia that we experience there in my own life.
Oh, my God. That's so beautiful.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. That's really cool. So you hadn't been to a conference in 15 years prior to Scottsdale?
Yeah, the first one that I went to, I was 19, and it was in San Francisco, and it was the NSP. So that was how long of a break that it was.
Wow.
And part of it was that I thought, well, like, okay, I've met two people, and I feel that, I can do whatever I want to do because I stutter, and it's not going to prevent me from getting a job because I understand it, and I'm accepting of it, and I stutter openly. But I didn't understand that as you grow older, you go through different developmental changes. And that the stuttering's with you every step of the way. And that you change the way that you look at yourself and look at your speech based on where you are in your life.
Wow. And you've gotten all these lessons just from being back from the conference for two weeks? Or is this a culmination of what you've experienced since 2009?
This is a culmination of things, but like the metaphor occurred to me. Well, Sunday when I had to tell the story for previously secret information, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I've been thinking about all of this stuff. I have to kind of purge it out of me and make some sense of it. So I have just been thinking about this stuff for like the past week, like, okay, I have all of these feelings coming up in me. How am I going to understand all of this? So I've just spent a ton of time thinking about it and going to therapy about it. So, it's the whole thing.
Wow. That's really cool. And I think that's important for, people to realize and people that are listening that the experience of being around lots of other people who stutter is not just in the experience. It also comes from the processing of that experience, mm-hmm. and how you deal with it when you come back to, your world, which is very different mm-hmm. from the 4 days that we experience when we're all together.
Yeah, and thank God for Facebook, because it's totally helped in the transition.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're right, because we get to connect with each other instantly mm-hmm. and share things that are going on, and you performed this this routine that you videoed, Sunday in San Francisco, and you've already shared it with lots of people who
mm-hmm.
get it, that are also processing like, wow, like I had this major event in my life and now I'm back in my world, and how do I bring the two together?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think you've really just kind of, helped people understand that it is a process, and you have to really do some thoughtful processing and really, think about things and even write things down, which, I'm glad to hear that you did that you've written some things down, because I do the same thing. I journal, mm-hmm. but I blog. The same thing, just writing the feelings down. And then, for me, like once they're on paper, it's like, okay, there, it's out. I've said it, and then you can kind of move past that. So,
And then the other thing is, I haven't always had people in my life who I could talk about this stuff with. And I think over the past few years, I've developed a network of people that I could talk about this stuff with. Mm. And so I think that's another thing. And they don't necessarily have to stutter, but they have to be willing to listen and to validate that. And I think that's an important piece too.
Yeah. Wow. So, do you think that you would ever consider, like, if the NSA asked you to perform, like, at a general session in front of the whole assembly?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would do my stand-up, but I would definitely do something like I did the other night. And there are four stories that I have up online now from previously secret information where I talk about the background stories that, you know, I only hint at in my stand-up. So, yeah, I mean, the thing that I love most is to share my experiences, whether they're at a nightclub or, you know, as a keynote or whatever.
Or a podcast, like you've just done here with us, you know, and I'm so glad that you that you did share this the feeling part about performing in front of your peers, and I'm excited about, you know, being able to air this as well as your video, because I think it will really help people understand, you know, the enormity of, you know, what you've done, and, you know, the risk that you've taken, and how, you know, how well it's paid off for both you and for other people that have had the opportunity to engage with you like this. So it's been really special.
Yeah, well, and also I just really appreciate the interview, because I think there is this intensity that the conference has, and then when you come back, it's that intensity is still with you, and just trying to figure out how to maintain that and what to do with that, which I think is something 850 people came home with, you know?
yeah. And I think that we have both covered that one of the best things to do after a conference like this is to talk about it.
Yes.
To talk about it, like we're doing here, you know, talk about the fact that it's not easy dealing with all the feelings that get stirred up, you know, both the positive feelings and the sad feelings and the bittersweet feelings. And, you know, you have to, you know, and I just love the way that you said that you have all these seeds now that you're going to plant and nurture in all the various different parts of your life. And, wow, like, I can't wait to see how Nina's garden grows and, you know, see what sprouts for, you know, next year. It's just so exciting. And I got to say, just on an ending note, you seem so empowered with what you're doing. Am I correct? I mean, is that what I'm picking up?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think that a lot of times – I think when you seem like you have your stuff together, I think there is an assumption people think you're like that all the time. And I probably had shared this on a previous podcast of yours, but I was once in the car with four or five of my friends, and they were all comics. They all didn't have any kind of disabilities. And I was the one driving, and we went to a drive-in, and I was just going to order a Diet Coke, and I said, okay, does anyone want anything else? And they're all, no. And so I said, okay. So I went and I ordered a Diet Coke, and then all at the same time, they all just started shouting out orders. And I'm all, no, I can't do it. And I wouldn't order, and I froze up. And all my friends are like, well, you get up and do stand-up constantly. Why can't you order through a drive-thru? I'm like, well, because I stutter, and sometimes it's kind of hard. So there are still those times when, like, even the people who you think are okay with it aren't always, or they may not be on certain days, or they are still dealing with all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely know what you mean about that, because I have a lot of people, you know, that tell me, oh my God, Pam, I just wish I was as confident as you are, you know, and it's kind of like that, you know, that perception that people have that I'm like this all the time, and I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm vulnerable, and I cry, and I get upset, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't have, you know, everything in my life isn't perfect, and I don't have the balance that I would like to have. So, yeah, I can appreciate you sharing that as well, because I think, you know, all of us have those moments where, you know, we second guess ourselves, or
mm-hmm.
you know, we fear something that in the past we've just done.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I appreciate you sharing that little story, because people need to recognize that no one, not even, you know, the President of the United States or God, can be
mm-hmm.
on a pedestal all the time, because
yeah.
you know, everybody makes mistakes, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I think that there are people that believe that, you know, God makes mistakes sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
God, I don't want to be talking about that, but but I'm so glad that we had this opportunity to share this particular experience, because I know it was powerful for you.
And yeah, it was.
And it was so powerful for me to be in the audience and see that and be part of it and see how everybody reacted. And you're really making a difference with those seeds of yours, girl.
Well, and we didn't even talk about Paul, which I think we need to have a whole podcast about him.
Oh my, you know, you're right. And for people that are listening that don't know what that means, there was this guy at the bar in the place where Nina performed who was a regular from town, who doesn't stutter, and Nina and I educated him quite a bit on stuttering. And
it's the best part was that when I first got in there, he said, well, isn't there some kind of brain thing that you could do? Isn't there some, I think you have to get to the root of the issue. And then, like, after me and you educated him for, like, you know, like an hour, and he saw my stand-up, at the end of it, he had said, you're a good communicator. And I'm like, oh, God, Pam's totally gotten into his head. So it was so funny.
Well, he and I had talked quite a bit, too, because I had my pin on that said, go ahead, ask me any question. I'm an expert on stuttering. And he said something about it, and I said, go ahead, ask me. So I stuttered on quick question, and he laughed, and he was genuinely laughing. And I said, wait a minute, you're not supposed to laugh at somebody who stutters. That's the whole point.
First thing.
You know, and at the end, like an hour later, like you said, after all was said and done, you know, he said to me, I really learned a lot from
mm-hmm.
guys, and I'm really glad I was here. And you're right, we could talk about him and the lessons learned from that, you know, random person that we met in a bar
mm-hmm.
That I think we might have had an impact on his life, you know, and that's pretty cool.
In many ways too, because he had all kinds of resolution there. So
he most certainly did. And incidentally, Nina and I have both friended this Paul on Facebook, and he's been in contact with me. I don't know if he's been in contact with you, but I think that's
he gives me lots of thumbs up.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think that's really neat that, you know, in your way and in my way and in all of our ways, people who stutter, if we allow it, we can have a tremendous impact on people who don't, and help them
yeah.
understand it a little bit about what the
mm-hmm.
experience is like.
Yeah.
Nina, thank you so much for sharing again. And I look forward to our next chat, and I hope that it will be soon.
Yes, I do as well. Thank you.
Yep, and this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Story.
No, 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 no.